I remember high school like it was a battlefield. I barely survived. Anger was my constant shadow, quick to flare up over the smallest things, like a guy teasing me in class or someone cutting in line at lunch. It scared off any potential boyfriends before they even got close. I'd lash out, say something sharp, and poof, they were gone. By graduation, I was the girl everyone knew as intense, which is code for stay away. College started, and at 19, I figured it was time to dip my toes into the dating pool. Tinder seemed easy enough. Swipe right, chat a bit, maybe meet up. What could go wrong? I matched with Jake after a few days of scrolling. He was cute. We texted for a week. Nothing deep, just banter about movies and music. He suggested catching the new superhero flick at the mall theater. "I'll pick you up," he said. "Got a truck. Plenty of room." I was nervous, but excited. Finally, a real date. I spent hours picking an outfit. Jeans, a cute top that showed just enough, and my favorite sneakers for that casual vibe. Mom gave me the side eye when I told her, "Be safe, honey. Call if anything feels off." He pulled up in this beat-up Ford pickup, blasting what sounded like some emo band's greatest hits. Loud, depressing lyrics about heartbreak and rain. I climbed in, forcing a smile. "Hey, cool truck," I said, trying to break the ice. "Yeah, it's a beast," he grunted, not even looking at me as he cranked the volume higher. The drive was awkward. He didn't ask about me, just nodded along to the music like it was church. We got to the theater, grabbed tickets for the 8 p.m. show, and settled in. The preview started, and I was hyped. The movie had all the hype, with explosions and witty one-liners. But Jake, he pulled out his phone immediately, the screen lighting up his face in the dark. I glanced over, thinking maybe he was checking the time. Nope. Tinder. He was swiping right there, thumb flying across profiles. "Everything okay?" I whispered, leaning closer. He smirked without looking up. "Oh yeah, babe. Just browsing. You know how it is." Browsing? On our date? I bit my tongue, anger bubbling like soda in my chest. But the movie kicked in, and damn, it was good. Action-packed, funny, the kind that makes you forget real life for a bit. I decided to ignore him, munch on my popcorn, and enjoy it. 10 minutes later, he leaned over, his breath hot on my ear. "You know, you're lucky to be out with me tonight. All these other girls on here, they're blowing up my phone, begging for a date. But I chose you." I turned, staring at him in the flickering light. "Lucky? Really?" My voice came out sharper than I meant, but he just chuckled like it was a joke. "Damn straight. I'm a catch." He went back to his phone, swiping again. I forced a smile, teeth gritted.
"Sure, whatever you say."
Inside, I was seething. Who says that? But the plot was thickening on screen. The hero about to uncover the big twist. I didn't want to bail yet. I'd paid for the ticket. And honestly, part of me wanted to see how bad this could get. Maybe prove to myself I could handle it without exploding. Then, out of nowhere, his hand landed on my stomach, fingers splayed like he owned the place. I froze. "My son will grow here," he murmured, eyes on the screen like it was the most normal thing. What the actual f**k? My brain short-circuited. "Son? We hadn't even kissed!" Rage hit me like a truck. Hot, blinding. I grabbed the back of his hair, not too hard, but firm, and slammed his forehead into the seat in front. "Ow! Hey, what the sh—" I hissed, smiling sweetly as heads turned.
"Don't create a scene."
My heart pounded, but it felt good. Cathartic. Like releasing a valve. I excused myself calmly. "Gotta hit the bathroom. Be right back." I didn't go back. Slipped out the side exit, heart racing, and called an Uber from the parking lot. The night air was cool. And as I waited, I laughed. Manic. Relieved. What a creep. Back home, I blocked him on everything, deleted Tinder, and poured myself a glass of wine. Mom was up, watching TV.
Date go okay?
I flopped on the couch. Total disaster. Guy was a walking red flag. She raised an eyebrow.
What happened?
I told her the whole thing. The music, the swiping, the sun in my stomach.
And he said, my son will grow here. Like, dude, we're not even...
Mom's eyes widened.
Oh, hell no.
Good for you walking out.
Yeah, but I kinda... smacked his head first.
Serves him right. Sometimes anger's got its place. This story has been inspired from a real-life incident shared by one of my subscribers. This is what she told me. When I was 18, I agreed to a Tinder date that ended up being a total disaster. He showed up in a pickup blasting this super gloomy music at full volume, which already set the mood badly. At the theater, instead of watching the film, he spent the whole time scrolling on Tinder right in front of me. At one point, he leaned over and said that I should feel fortunate to be there with him, since apparently other girls were lining up for the chance. That was my cue. I excused myself to the bathroom, texted my roommate, and she came to rescue me. I had just stepped out of the bathroom in Jamie's apartment. My bare feet padded softly across the worn wooden floor. It was mid-afternoon, and sunlight was slanting lazily through the blinds, striping the walls like prison bars. Jamie called my name from the doorway. Ava! His voice light, casual, the way it always was when he wanted to show me something stupid on his phone. I turned toward him, half smiling. But before I could say anything, it hit me. A crushing cold. Ice around my neck. No, on my neck. Fingers. A hand. An invisible hand. It clamped down tight. Fingers digging into my throat. Thumb pressing hard against my windpipe. My voice died in my mouth. My arms flailed, trying to pull it away, but there was nothing there. Just the pressure. The pain. The panic. I could see Jamie running toward me, his phone falling from his hand. Ava! What the hell's happening? I tried to answer, but nothing came. My chest convulsed, mouth wide open like a fish out of water. I dropped to my knees. My vision tunneled. Everything around me bent and warped like I was underwater. I felt the fingerprints digging deeper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then... just like that, it stopped. I gasped, the air burning as it brushed back into my lungs. Jamie cradled me, his face pale and eyes wild. I was calling 911. Jesus, Ava, you weren't breathing. I couldn't stop shaking. I sat there on his bedroom floor, trembling, crying, completely hollowed out. I had no medical issues, no asthma, no allergies, no reason to have a panic attack. I hadn't taken anything. I was sober. It made no sense. Except something about the cold, the fingers, the intent behind it. It didn't feel like a random attack. It felt personal. I didn't tell Jamie what I felt. Not at first. Not about the cold fingers, or how I knew they were female. It sounds crazy, I know, but there was a feminine rage in that grip. Something bitter. Something betrayed. A few days later, I got curious. Jamie had always brushed off his past relationships like they were footnotes, but I started asking questions. She was just intense, he said when I brought up his last girlfriend. 5 years. We grew apart. Her name was Emily, right? I asked, acting like I didn't already find a crumpled photo of them in the back of his drawer. He froze. Who told you that? You did, I lied. I didn't push further that day, but I did some digging. She died 3 months ago. Car crash, just outside Albany.
She had swerved off a dry, empty road and slammed into a tree. Died instantly. Her obituary was filled with empty, cheerful words, like someone was trying to erase her with politeness. What struck me was what Jamie never said. Never a word about her death. Not once. And when I brought it up, that was a weird time, he said quietly. We hadn't spoken in months. But you were together for 5 years. People change. I kept dreaming about her. I never saw her face, just felt her presence. Cold air creeping in from the corners, doors creaking open on their own. Her voice, raspy but mocking, whispering from behind mirrors and closet doors. I tried to tell myself it was stress, hallucination, guilt by proxy. One night, I heard crying coming from the bathroom. The door was locked, the lights flickering. Jamie wasn't home. I banged on the door. Who's in there? No answer, just sobs. Then silence. When the door finally creaked open on its own, the mirror was cracked. There was no one inside. The final straw came when Jamie passed out drunk on the couch, and I found an old phone buried under his bed. It was her phone, Emily's. The wallpaper was still their selfie. The last message she sent read, "If you ever lie to me again, I swear I'll haunt your next girlfriend until she chokes on your bullshit." I dropped the phone like it burned me. I was done pretending this was coincidence. I confronted Jamie that night. "You lied about her death." He didn't even flinch. "What do you mean?" "You said she swerved, but I read the police report. There were no skid marks, no sign of braking. Her car just turned." His expression hardened. "I didn't lie." "Yes, you did," I whispered. "And you kept her phone. Why?" He took a deep breath. "Because she wasn't supposed to die." "What the hell does that mean?" "We had a fight. I told her it was over. She screamed at me, said she'd never let me be happy. Then she left, and I followed her. I just wanted to talk." "What did you do, Jamie?"
"I didn't mean for it to happen. I just wanted to scare her. I didn't know the road curved there."
He sat down, cradling his face in his hands. She looked at me one last time before the crash. I saw her mouth moving.
"What?"
She said, "I'll be back." That night, I slept on the couch. I didn't trust Jamie. But worse, I didn't trust the air around me. I woke up at 3:17 a.m., the room cold as a freezer. The windows were shut. Then, I saw her. Just a flash, standing at the edge of the hallway, long hair soaked, eyes hollow, watching me, smiling. I couldn't move. She lifted one hand slowly and pointed to her own throat and vanished. I moved out 2 days later, left everything behind. I haven't seen Jamie since. Me and my buddy Jake, both fresh out of college and in our mid-20s, had this tradition of hitting the trails in northern Georgia every fall. We weren't hardcore survivalists or anything, just two guys from Atlanta trying to escape the grind of entry-level jobs and city noise. Jake was the planner, always mapping out routes on his phone, while I handled the gear, packing way too much beer and not enough sensible shit, like extra socks. That October weekend, we picked a trailhead deep in the Chattahoochee National Forest, about 4 miles in from the parking lot. The leaves were turning that fiery red and orange, crunching under our boots as we trudged along. "Man, this is living," Jake said, slapping a mosquito off his neck. "No bosses, no emails, just us and the woods." "Yeah, until we get lost and end up on some true crime podcast," I shot back, laughing. We bantered like that the whole way, talking about everything from our happy dating lives to how we'd quit our jobs if we won the lottery. Jake was nursing a breakup. His ex had ghosted him after 3 years, and I was dealing with my own crap, like figuring out if I even liked my marketing gig. The trail wound through thick pines and over rocky streams, and by the time we set up camp in a small clearing, we were beat but buzzin'. We gathered firewood, started a blaze in the pit we'd dug, and cracked open some cans. Dinner was basic. Hot dogs roasted on sticks, chased with whiskey from my flask. The temperature had been mild during the day, but as the sun dipped, it plummeted. Mid-fall in Georgia usually means sweater weather, not this Arctic bullshit. Dude, it's gotta be dropping into the 20s, I muttered, zipping up my sleeping bag tighter. Feels like we're in freaking Alaska. Jake poked the fire with a branch, sparks flying up. You wussy. This is what makes it memorable. Remember that time in college when we camped by the lake and it rained all night? We survived that. Barely, I grumbled. My tent leaked like a sieve. We laughed, the heat from the flames warming our faces as we swapped stories. Full bellies and the crackle of the fire lulled us into sleep pretty quick. I dozed off, staring at the stars peeking through the canopy, thinking about how peaceful it all felt. I woke to something tapping my foot. Not hard, just insistent. My eyes snapped open, and there was Jake, silhouetted against the dying embers, holding a stick like it was a lifeline. He didn't say a word, just nodded toward the fire. I followed his gaze, and my heart slammed into my ribs. Two wild boars, massive, shaggy beasts, were rooting around the coals, kicking up dirt and snorting like they owned the place. One was easily 150 pounds, tusks curling out like scimitars. The other a bit smaller, but no less mean-looking. Their eyes glinted in the low light, and they were pissed, grunting and shuffling closer to our camp. Shit, I whispered, barely audible. My voice caught in my throat. We had no guns, no knives worth a damn, just a hand axe I'd left propped against a tree, way out of reach. If we moved, we'd spook them, and everyone knows Georgia boars don't fuck around. They're invasive, aggressive as hell, and they've gored hikers before. One wrong noise and we'd be shredded. Jake's face was pale, eyes wide. Don't move, he mouthed, easing back into his bag. We lay there, frozen, watching them. The bigger one snorted, pawing at the ground where our food scraps were buried. What if they charge? I hissed, my pulse thundering. They won't if we stay quiet, he whispered back, his voice steady, but I could hear the fear. Just wait it out. Fire's almost gone. They'll lose interest. Time dragged like molasses. An hour felt like eternity. The cold seeped into my bones, but sweat beaded on my forehead from the tension. The boars circled the pit, tusks scraping roots, their breath puffing in the frigid air. One bumped the logs, sending embers scattering, and I nearly pissed myself. Jake, man, this is bad, I murmured. Remember that story about the guy in Atlanta? Boar tore his leg open. Shut up, he snapped under his breath. You're gonna jinx it. If they come at us, grab for the axe. I'll distract. No way, I replied. We're both getting out of this. We kept whispering like that, low and urgent, sharing stupid plans that'd probably get us killed. It was surreal. Two grown men reduced to statues, praying to whatever god watches over idiots in the woods. I thought about my mom back home, how she'd freak if she knew. And Jake's ex? Bet she'd feel bad now. Finally, as the fire sputtered to ash, the boars lost interest. The big one grunted one last time and then trotted off into the underbrush, the smaller one following. We waited another 10 minutes, hearts pounding, before sitting up. Holy fuck, Jake exhaled, rubbing his face. That was too close. No shit, I said, laughing shakily. We almost became boar chow. We rebuilt the fire with trembling hands, talking through the adrenaline crash. You think they smelled us? He asked. Probably the hot dogs, I replied. Lesson learned. Bury the scraps deeper next time. It was early spring 2023, and I'd just turned 27, fresh out of a long-term relationship that fizzled out without much drama. Living in Seattle, working as a project manager in tech, specifically in sustainable energy solutions, I was killing it career-wise. My job wasn't just a paycheck, it was my passion. I'd built a team from scratch, landed major contracts, and even spoken at a few conferences. But my personal life? A drought. Friends kept nagging me, "Michelle, you're hot! Successful! Get out there!" So, I caved and I signed up for this local dating app called Pacific Matches, figuring it was low-key and it focused on people in the PNW. Big mistake number one. I used my real name, Michelle Thompson. I thought, why not? I'm not hiding anything. Uploaded a few pics from hikes in the Olympics, mentioned my love for indie coffee shops and coding on weekends. Within a week, I had a few decent chats going. Then came his message. His profile said, James Hargrove, 35, British expat working in renewable energy consulting. Same city, similar field, seemed like a potential match. His first DM popped up. "Hello, Michelle. I've got to say, your profile caught my eye. Beautiful woman, with brains to boot. I'm worth about £5 million net. Tech investments paid off handsomely back in London. Fancy quitting that job of yours and letting me take care of you? Move in, we'll travel the world. No strings, just luxury." I stared at my phone, coffee going cold in my hand. Who leads with their bank account? It felt less like an offer and more like an assumption, like he'd already decided my life for me. I typed back politely, "Thanks for the message, James, but I'm happy with my career and independence. Not looking to quit or move in with anyone right now. Best of luck." He replied instantly, "Come on, love. Women like you deserve to be pampered. Why slave away in an office when you could be sipping champagne on a yacht? I've got properties in Seattle and Vancouver. Think about it." "Nope, not interested," I shot back. "Please respect that." But he didn't. Messages kept coming.
"You're making a mistake. I can give you everything. Let me prove it. Dinner at Canley's?"
I blocked him. End of story, right? Wrong. 2 days later, a new profile. Jamie H. Same pics, same bio.
"Miss me, Michelle? Block the wrong bloke."
Block. Then, J. Hargrove Esquire with a winking emoji.
"Persistent, aren't I? That's the British charm."
I reported him to the site admins, explaining the harassment. They IP banned him, but the next day, another account.
"You can't hide, love. VPNs are a wonder."
My stomach twisted. This wasn't funny anymore. I deleted my entire account, figuring that had cut him off. But nope, he found my Instagram. I use it professionally, posting about green tech innovations, networking events. Suddenly, likes on old posts, then DMs.
"Saw your TEDx talk? Brilliant! But you'd be even better at home with me."
I blocked him there, too, but he popped up under alts. Twitter, same thing.
LinkedIn, for God's sake.
He commented on a post that I'd made about a job opening for a junior analyst.
"I'd apply, but only if the boss is as stunning as you."
I confided in my best friend Mia over wine at her place.
"This guy's unhinged," I said, showing her the screenshots.
"He's British, on a work visa here, but acts like he owns the city." Mia leaned in, eyes wide.
"Michelle, that's stalking. Change your privacy settings. Report him everywhere."
"I have," I sighed. "But LinkedIn's public for job stuff. I can't lock it down completely." The job posting was still up. I'd hired someone weeks ago, but forgot to remove it. Sloppy on my part. Then, one Tuesday morning, my receptionist buzzed me.
"Miss Thompson, there's a James Hargrove here for his interview. Says it's with you."
My blood ran cold. I peeked at the security cam feed on my computer. There he was, in a sharp suit, smirking at the front desk like he belonged. Tall, dark hair, that posh British accent probably charming the pants off everyone.
"Tell security to escort him out," I said, my voice shaking. "He's not scheduled. He's a stalker."
Our guard, Mike, marched down. I watched on the feed as Mike confronted him. "Sir, you need to leave. No appointments." James's face twisted.
"This is absurd! Michelle knows me! Tell her James is here! We're meant to be together!"
Mike grabbed his arm. "Out. Now." James yanked away.
"Get your hands off me, you yank brute! I'll sue!"
But Mike hauled him to the parking lot, got his plate on cam.
I called the police right after, filing a report. He's been harassing me online for weeks, I told the officer, a no-nonsense woman named Detective Reyes. Now he's shown up at my work. I'm scared. Reyes nodded. We'll look into it. Got his details? From the plate, they traced him to Hargrove Consulting, one of our biggest clients. Ironic, right? They pulled him in for questioning that afternoon. I imagined the scene. James in an interrogation room, sweating under fluorescent lights.
It's just a misunderstanding,
he'd probably say in that clipped accent.
I fancy her. I thought persistence would win her over.
His bosses weren't amused. Having a stalker on payroll, especially one fixated on a key contact at a partner company, bad for business. They fired him on the spot. Turns out, he was here on an H-1B visa tied to that job. Without it, he had to leave the U.S. But, get this, he didn't go back to the U.K. Instead, he self-deported to Canada. Vancouver, I think. Maybe to dodge questions or start fresh. Why Canada? Who knows? Perhaps he had connections there. Or it was easier than facing whatever waited in London. Because, yeah, the bonus twist. Detective Reyes called me a week later. Miss Thompson, thought you'd want to know. Hargrove's married. Wife and two kids back in London. She's filed for divorce. Cited his infidelities abroad. I nearly dropped the phone. Married? Kids? Jesus. Yep. Stay safe. Restraining orders in place if he tries anything from afar. I hung up, sinking into my couch. Relief washed over me, but so did anger. How many women had he pulled this on? That entitled prick. Flashing his money like it erased boundaries. I pictured his wife, probably strong like me, raising those kids alone now. I hoped she was okay, that the kids were shielded from his mess. This story has been inspired from a real-life incident shared by one of our subscribers. This is what she said. When I first tried online dating, I made the mistake of using my full real name. A man from the same city and field messaged me, immediately bragging about his wealth and suggesting I quit my job to live with him. I declined. I have my own career and independence. But he didn't take no for an answer. After I blocked him on the dating site, he kept creating new accounts, even using a VPN to bypass IP bans. I eventually deleted my account, but he found my public socials and started lurking. Things escalated when he saw an old job posting that I forgot to remove from LinkedIn, and he showed up at my office pretending to have an interview with me. Security escorted him out, and I filed a police report. With surveillance footage, police traced him to his job, which happened to be with one of our clients. He was let go. He left the country shortly after that, and I later found out that he had a wife and kids back home. I'm glad he's gone, and I hope they're safe.
Sometime last year, I started dating this guy named Steve. He seemed perfect. He was handsome and caring, and he had a lot of money. I felt really comfortable with him. The only problem was that I wasn't being completely honest with him about my past. I met him right after I had moved to the city to escape my crazy ex-boyfriend Miguel. I went through hell in my last relationship and really had trouble talking about it with anyone. On my first date with Steve, obviously I didn't tell him anything about Miguel. But then we kept on seeing each other, and I started to have real feelings for him. I didn't know how to bring up Miguel, like it was never the right time to talk about something so heavy. After about a month of dating, I was feeling pretty guilty about not being open with Steve. He deserved to know everything about me, even the difficult parts. So when we went out to a restaurant for dinner, I decided to pull off the band-aid and tell him. I didn't say every detail, but I told him the main points. That I had an ex who was off his meds and violent, that I basically fled my hometown, and that I still have anxiety issues because of it. Steve, being the amazing boyfriend that he was, listened to everything I said as if he was taking mental notes. He asked me a bunch of questions, really specific stuff like Miguel's last name and our old address. It felt a little weird at the time, but Steve worked in IT. He was always a very technical, meticulous person, so maybe he just wanted as many details as possible. The next morning, I was still asleep in bed while Steve was off in the kitchen fixing breakfast. I could hear him humming to himself, but that didn't really wake me up. I woke up because my phone started buzzing. I heard my sister's voice on the line. She asked me if I'd been on Facebook lately. I told her no, and she said that everyone was posting memorial photos of Miguel. He had died the night before. I know it sounds terrible, but I was thrilled to hear the news. I won't tell you what it was like living with Miguel, but he was an absolute monster. He deserved what he got. Then I started to feel pretty guilty for thinking that. I asked my sister what happened, and she said that she didn't know. Nobody knew except his parents, and they weren't talking to anybody. I decided not to think about it and just go about my day. Steve and I had breakfast together. Nothing eventful, just a normal couple's breakfast, though Steve seemed to be in an extra chipper mood. I wanted to tell him about the news I just heard, but I thought that would ruin our breakfast. I went to work after that and tried to be as productive as possible, even though my mind kept drifting back to Miguel. I checked the news a bunch, but there were still no specifics about what had happened to him. That afternoon, Steve surprised me at my work with a bouquet of flowers. He'd never done that before. I asked him what the occasion was, and he said that he wanted to make sure I had a good day. He convinced me to leave work early, and we went to take a walk around the park together. The flowers were beautiful. He was in such a good mood. It was a very romantic afternoon, until we were all alone in the middle of the park and a really weird smile spread across his face. He looked like he was proud of himself. Then he asked me, "So, how's Miguel?" That's when I knew that Steve had something to do with Miguel's death. It wasn't just a coincidence that my ex died the same night that I told my current boyfriend about what a monster he was. Horrified, I backed away from Steve. "What did you do?" I asked. "Absolutely nothing." "Ha ha ha ha! I was just online and I happened to mention your ex to a couple people. One thing led to another, and I might have signed you up for a little kill swap." "What the hell is a kill swap?" He looked around to make sure no one was nearby. Then he explained that he didn't just work in IT. He used the deep web to work with clients that were very particular about their anonymity. And somewhere in the deep web, on some website that no one can find, there's a place where you register a person you want killed. Then you partner off with another client, agreeing to kill each other's target. "It's a perfect plan," he said. "There's no way to get caught because you never find out who the other person is. Everything is completely anonymous." "So, you've sent someone you've never met to kill Miguel?" "Yep," he said. "But I think he's from Santa Cruz, because that's where you're going to kill his target." I couldn't believe it. This guy was crazy. There was no way I was going to murder somebody. How could he possibly sign me up for something like this without talking to me first? I ran away. I couldn't be near him anymore. "Wait," he shouted at me. "Let's talk about this. You can't tell any—" I didn't hear the last part of his sentence because I was too far gone. I ran all the way back to my car and hopped in. The bouquet Steve had given me was on the car seat. As I drove away, I threw the bouquet out the window. I didn't want to be near them. But when I looked down in my lap, I saw the card that had fallen out of the bouquet. A street address was written on one side, an address in Santa Cruz. I knew what I had to do. I drove straight to the police station and showed them the address. I explained everything that Steve had told me, even though I barely understood any of the deep web stuff he was talking about. But when I said the words "kill swap," the officer flinched. He was looking at the card at the time, but he threw it back at me. "I don't want to see this. Take it away." "Too late," I told him. "You saw it. Now whoever lives at that address is in danger. Can you help this person before he's killed like Miguel?" The officer took a long, sad breath. "Whoever lives here is already dead. I've dealt with kill swappers before. The people in those deep web groups always have backup killers waiting. But that's not the worst part." I was afraid to ask. If someone ever goes to the authorities with any information like you just did, then everyone they love will be killed. I really wish you hadn't shown me this paper. For your own safety, I'm not going to write a report. I grabbed the paper from him and went back to my house. All of Steve's stuff was already packed up and gone. As soon as he realized I'd gone to the cops, he fled. It's been a week since I talked to the officer, and so far, two of my cousins and one uncle have already been killed. I know that more deaths are coming. I don't know how those people knew I went to the police, but they did. And now I live in constant fear. All because my boyfriend wanted to use the deep web to help me overcome my past.